Chapter 21. Understanding the Business. As a Staff Plus engineer, there is often more work on your plate than you can easily handle. So how do you figure out what to focus on in the interests of the business? In order to answer this question, it's necessary to understand the business. It's possible to grow in your career to staff level without paying too much attention to the business side, but it's very difficult to thrive in a Staff Plus job and grow further without this knowledge. Other parts of the role, like software engineering, long-term planning, and collaboration, are also important and are skills you've likely strengthened during your career journey. In this chapter, we cover 1. North Stars, KPIs, and OKRs. 2. Your team and product. 3. Your company. 4. Public companies. 5. Startups. 6. Your industry. 1. North Stars, KPIs, and OKRs. The concepts of North Stars, KPIs, and OKRs are things most software engineers find boring and irrelevant. A CEO talking about OKRs or a product manager discussing KPIs tend to be uninteresting to software engineers because we prefer specifics. Rather than talk about OKRs and KPIs, we like to focus on which project to do and why. For a single engineering team, it's easy to talk about the specifics of projects and their impact. But with more teams, you can't just list what every team plans to do. It's necessary to step back and look at the bigger picture. And this is where North Stars, KPIs, OKRs, and roadmaps come in. As a Staff Plus engineer, you need to understand why these concepts are important and what they mean, and translate this for engineers on your team so they understand what to care about and why. One more reason these concepts are so important is that most Staff Plus engineers are partners to engineering managers, EMs, and product managers, PMs, in defining the team's strategy and roadmap. To speak the same language as EMs and PMs, North Stars, KPIs, and OKRs are helpful. North Star. This is the vision of a team or product. It's what guides these things to where they need to get to. For example, the North Star of an internal payments team could be enable any team at the company to integrate payments into their product in a day or less. The North Star is usually ambitious and not trivial or even possible. This is intentional because it is aspirational and intended to keep team members motivated and focused. A good example is the North Star of spacecraft engineering company SpaceX, to get humans to the planet Mars. By focusing on this grandiose goal that's currently unachievable, the company makes incremental improvements that bring it closer step by step. This is the purpose of a North Star for any team or company. North Star metrics are measurements which capture progress made towards it, such as number of customers, daily users, and similar. KPIs. KPI stands for Key Performance Indicator, and is a quantifiable measure of progress in an area. Most North Star metrics are captured in KPIs. Here are some common ones. Gross merchandise volume, GMV. At Uber, this refers to total revenue comprising customers' spending. Similarly, for a payments processor like Stripe or Adyen, it refers to the total amount of money the company's customers process with the payments processor. Revenue. The amount of money a product or team earns. In the case of Uber, this tends to be about 10 to 20% of GMV, because the remaining sum is paid to drivers, restaurants, and couriers. In the case of Stripe or Adyen, this is much lower, at 1 to 3% of GMV. Number of customers. This is straightforward and is commonly used by B2B, business-to-business, services. DAU or MAU. A product's daily active users or monthly active users. Incremental numbers. Incremental GMV, incremental revenue, incremental DAU or MAU. Churn percentage. The percentage of customers who do not recur in a given period as a share of the total customer base. The period is usually a month or a quarter for up-to-date feedback. Uptime. The amount of time the service is fully operational as a share of total time. Percentage of customer support tickets. At large companies, it's common to capture the percentage of customer support tickets for areas which teams own. A spike in this metric may indicate quality issues. Net Promoter Score, NPS. Customers are sent surveys with questions about how much they would recommend the product to others. The questionnaire creates an average score, which is tracked. There are countless other KPIs like Customer Lifetime Value, CLV, Customer Acquisition Cost, CAC, the number of reported bugs, and potentially anything else you can think of. A good KPI is measurable, unambiguous, and helps indicate progress and flag up problems. A good KPI is also very hard to game, to make the metric go in the right direction without real improvement happening. OKRs. Objectives and Key Results, OKR, is a very popular approach for setting and measuring goals at tech companies, which Google introduced in 1999 when the company was a year old, with around 40 employees. The approach was suggested by investor John Doerr, who later wrote the book Measure What Matters, about it and its success. Businesses operating with OKRs set them at company level, organizational level, and all the way down to team level. An OKR has two components. Objective, a high-level goal that is qualitative, meaning not necessarily measurable. Key results, measurable outcomes that help determine progress toward achieving the objective. An OKR always has one objective but can have multiple key results. Here are some examples. Number 1. Objective, improve the reliability of our service. Key results, 1. Increase system uptime from 99.8% to 99.9%. 2. Reduce by 20% the P95 latency for API responses. 3. Reduce by 30% unhandled exception errors. Number 2. Objective, improve the security of our web and mobile applications. Key results. 1. Complete a third-party security audit and address major issues raised. 2. Build and ship two-factor authentication for all customers. 3. Respond to 90% of security issues raised within 2 business days. Number 3. Objective. Optimize our infrastructure costs. Key results. 1. Increase the median CPU utilization of virtual machines to 25%, up from 15%. 2. Retire or migrate all services still running on the unsupported and resource-intensive Python 2. If your company uses OKRs, understand which objectives and key results the leadership cares about by starting at the top. Figure out how your team contributes to which objectives. Work with your product manager and engineering manager to craft OKRs for the team that make sense for the business and that engineers understand. You might have to step in to translate some of this from corporate jargon, as well as the definitions of key results and objectives. Don't obsess too much about OKRs. They're a tool to help a team focus, similar to how tools like ticketing systems can aid efficiency. However, as with any tool, there's a risk of overusing OKRs and becoming fixated on achieving a certain result rather than building the right thing for customers. Are the right things being measured? A noticeable difference between standout engineering teams and average ones is that on standout teams, engineers question KPIs and even OKRs from product folks. For role model staff and above engineers, I consider this practice to be a given. Question every single measurement brought to the table and investigate it from several angles. Are we measuring the right thing? If a metric is improved, will it yield the expected business result? For example, if a KPI is about the latency of an endpoint, is reducing latency going to make a noticeable difference for customers and the business? Or would reducing the error rate be more significant? How can this measurement or measurement target be gamed? Measurements can be gamed, aka manipulated, in creative ways. For example, at Uber, my organization mandated all endpoints to have 99.9% reliability. What followed was several teams with reliability well below this target simply changed their measurement of reliability to hit the new target. They made no code changes. Another time, the target was to reduce 500 server response codes, and a team simply changed the existing 500 failure response codes to 200 response codes, moving the error message to the body of the response. What other things should be measured as countermeasures? As any measurement can be gamed, it's good to have a couple of additional metrics to capture for a more balanced overview. For example, a goal might be to increase median CPU utilization from 15% to 25% because this is a proxy metric for superior resource usage. However, how will you measure that there are no code changes which make the code less efficient and use more CPU? You'd want to put some performance benchmarks in place to measure baseline code performance over time, and perhaps also measure the latency of the endpoints, like the P50 and P95 values, to ensure that higher CPU utilization doesn't noticeably degrade user experience. Don't forget the bigger picture. Measuring a system's characteristics is much easier than measuring customer satisfaction, customer frustration, or why customers convert or churn. These crucial details risk being lost by focusing only on very specific measurements. 2. Your team and product. The best place to start figuring out how the business works is with the product you and the team are working on. Understand how this product works, why customers use it, what the competition is, and how it contributes to the company's bottom line. Put on a product manager hat. Does your team have a dedicated product manager? If yes, fantastic. This is someone you can and should partner with. If not, the product manager role still needs to be filled, so consider doing that. It's especially common for internal-facing engineering teams like a platform team building a technical product to have no product manager. We cover more on platform teams in Part 1, Chapter 5, Thriving in Different Environments. However, even on these teams, there are product-related activities someone should pick up in order for the team to be efficient, including identify and understand customers. Who exactly are the customers? Which problems do the team's services or products solve for them? And what are some customer personas that can help developers empathize with customers? Measure customer satisfaction. How happy or unhappy are customers with the service they receive? Especially on platform teams with no product manager, there's often a knowledge gap because the team doesn't measure this via surveys or by talking to customer teams. Get input from customers for the team's roadmap. If your team is building a service or product for other internal teams, it would be silly to not get their input for the roadmap. To do this well, someone needs to engage personally with these teams. In the absence of a dedicated product manager, put on your product manager hat and get to work on the activities you've just heard. And if you do have a dedicated product manager, partner with them. Perhaps you can help with these activities. Put yourself in the customer's shoes. Why would you want to spend a lot of time and effort to understand customers? It's because understanding how customers operate is how you can find customer problems that need solving. A key difference between senior and staff plus engineers is problem solving versus problem finding. Both senior engineers and staff plus engineers are expected to solve challenging problems, but staff plus engineers are also expected to find problems that are worth solving. Putting yourself in the customer's shoes is one of the most obvious ways to do so. If you are not a regular user of the product you're building, try and become one. This is much easier to do with consumer products, especially ones that solve a problem. For example, when I joined Skype, I was using the video calling service for contacting friends, so was already a user. However, this can be trickier with certain types of products. B2C, business to consumer products. When building a product for which you are not a target customer, sign up and attempt to use the product like customers do. Learn about the target demographic and always consider how people use the product. B2B, business-to-business products. Putting yourself in a customer's shoes isn't easy. Still, it's worth trying. For example, at Shopify, many developers set up their own store on the platform and list some digital products no external users see in order to experience the setup process as a user. They also test things like the purchase flow from the merchant side. When customers are internal, try using test accounts or other ways to observe the customer experience. This is great for building empathy and getting closer to customers. Get involved with customer support. This is one of the best ways to put yourself in the customer's place. Read customer support tickets and listen to customer support calls. Even better, talk to customer support folks who can summarize users' most common issues and share how customer sentiment changes over time. Know why customers use your product. Why do customers use us is an obvious question, and it's surprising how often engineers don't have an answer. As a Staff Plus engineer, you cannot afford to not know this, so find out. Here's how to. Talk to customers. Especially for niche products like B2B products, it helps to talk to customers or join sessions where sales, product, customer support, or other user-facing functions talk with customers. Shadow user research sessions. If your company runs interview sessions with customers and runs plans by them, then join in. This is a fantastic way to learn what users care about. Read reviews. Go through user reviews, which are subjective personal opinions, and also analyst reviews for better-known products and media articles which may contain information about competitors. Who are your competitors and how do they work? What do they do differently, do better, and do worse than you? Tracking competitors is often the responsibility of product folks, but I believe it greatly benefits a Staff Plus engineer and your product to do this research. You are likely to spot things a product person misses and might find glaring gaps in your product that competitors don't have and which metrics overlook. If possible, sign up to a competitor's service to evaluate it as a user. This is straightforward for consumer products, but might be a lot harder for business ones. Talk to product folks about how they evaluate the competition and see if you can use existing accounts to assess competitors' products. A great way to share your observations is to create a comparison document featuring your product and the competition. This can help spread knowledge to the rest of the team. Particularly useful comparators include a UX comparison of user flows, such as signing up and executing similar actions, captured in images or video. Comparison of features and capabilities listed next to each other. A strategy comparison, sharing insights about competitor strategies and how these compare to your company's. Comparison of user feedback about your product and competitors' products. Understand the product's business value. Why does your company invest a pile of money and effort into building your product, and what is the return on investment? The easiest way to answer these questions is to ask your product manager or engineering manager. Don't accept shallow answers and dig deep to understand why the business invests in your product and team. Products can generally be split into two categories by their contribution to the business. Profit centers. Products the business perceives as creating wealth for the company, such as products that directly generate revenue like the ads division in a social media company, or the front office teams at an investment bank. Cost centers. Products which are necessary parts of the business but don't generate income, such as compliance, legal functions, and customer support. We cover more details on profit centers and cost centers in Part 1, Chapter 1, Career Paths. Here are some questions for identifying which of the two categories above your product fits into and how it relates to business value. What are the KPIs and OKRs of your product? How do they map to the company's revenue, growth, and cost metrics? How much revenue and/or cost savings does this product directly generate today and in the future? How much revenue and/or cost savings does this product indirectly generate, for example, by other functions using it? To how much does your product contribute to customer growth? Does your product reduce customer churn or increase retention? If so, how and by how much? Create a SWOT analysis of your product. SWOT stands for Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats. It's a planning document which describes a product and the business environment it exists in. Research these four areas, put it into a document, and share it with your product counterpart and team for feedback. This exercise forces you to think like a business owner and understand the competition. You'll view your product in a more strategic way after you complete the exercise. 3. Your company. Being inside your company is the best way to start to understand the business. There are plenty of ways to get a sense of how things work. Let's go through these. What is the business model? How does your company generate money? How does it turn revenue into profit and manage costs? If it doesn't yet turn a profit, what's the plan to achieve this? At startups, it's common to make a loss for a longer period of time and to take years to reach profitability. It's still worthwhile understanding what the unit economics are and where they need to get to in order for the company to turn a profit. Unit economics refers to the cost of producing a single unit of product or service that the business sells. For example, in the early days of Uber, the per-unit cost of a trip in a new city could be double the revenue it brought in. For publicly traded companies, the quarterly business results are public domain and provide a picture of recent performance. At these places, you can usually get a recording of the latest earnings call or a transcript after the event. Evaluate these sources to understand more about the business model of your company and where the current focus is. To understand how the company makes money, it's useful to familiarize yourself with areas such as marketing, sales, and consumer behavior, especially at B2C companies, how enterprise sales works, and how it differs at B2B companies. Have one-on-ones with product people. Product managers are the glue between a business and its product. They need an excellent understanding of the business and how their products affect performance and growth. To get a better business sense, talk to these people. Consider starting with a one-off meeting with a product person and ask them how the business works and how their products relate to it. Talk with people outside of engineering and product. A mistake some Staff Plus people make is to only connect with engineers and product people while ignoring the wider business. Don't do this. Expand your outlook. Consider talking with people from other tech disciplines, such as design, data science, UX research, technical program management, TPM, and similar areas. InfoSec and/or security is highly relevant for most products, while legal is helpful for open source licensing queries. Business areas your team supports. The business teams that rely on your products. These could be customer support, marketing, finance, HR, etc., depending on your product's connection to the business. Corporate communications and/or public relations, PR. At larger companies, this group is useful to know for publicity-related matters like blogging, talks at conferences, and presenting your team's work publicly in any way. Groups unconnected with your team or product. As counterintuitive as it sounds, it can be useful to occasionally talk with people within the company who have no connection with your product in order to understand what they do, how they help the business, and what their connection to engineering is. For the most part, this type of conversation has no benefits in the short to midterm. However, it can help broaden your perspective and to make a personal connection with someone in a very different part of the business. Basically, it's a form of networking and a learning opportunity. Have one-on-ones with business stakeholders. Product managers are often colleagues who talk directly with business stakeholders with an interest in the product you build. Product folks capture requirements and expectations, and also set expectations with business stakeholders on what is realistic, and communicate with these people about what is being built. As a Staff Plus engineer, do you need to talk with business stakeholders? If you have an amazing product manager who captures details and has strong connections with these people, then the answer might be no. The product manager may have things under control, and another person, you, talking with the business stakeholder would only create overhead. However, it's often the case that meeting business stakeholders and giving them your undivided attention in a one-on-one is an incredibly high-leverage activity you should do because, without this relationship, you are fully dependent on your product manager and cannot stand in for them, even if this is needed. As an engineer, you get more of the unfiltered business context and less watered-down detail via a product manager. By reaching out directly, business stakeholders are more likely to ping you when they see engineering-related problems and issues which a product manager may filter out and not share with the engineering team. As a Staff Plus engineer, you need to be a partner to the business. But how can you be a great partner if you don't even talk to business colleagues? In my experience, business people at tech companies jump at the chance of a one-on-one with a Staff Plus engineer. This is because they often believe their area gets little to no direct attention from engineering, even though their results heavily rely on engineering work. Basically, it's in the stakeholder's interest to build a connection. Which business areas are useful for you to have conversations with? Here are a few. Business teams that are active users of your product or for whom you build. Customer support and operations teams that get feedback from users. Marketing and sales teams which might use your product to close customers or market the business. Finance teams that generate reports based on your product's metrics. Identify these teams. Your product manager could help with this. Then, set up one-on-ones with the right people. Reach out and say that you're interested in learning about their business area and how engineering might be able to help them. I have yet to see any business unit turn down an engineering representative who wants to help and seeks information for this. Pay attention to communication from leadership. When leadership holds all hands, town halls, or sends emails to large groups, pay attention to what is said. If this is delivered indirectly, try to figure out what the real message is. At the Staff Plus level, you may be used to leadership communicating in an indirect way and using language to deliver sensitive messages in ways which require interpretation. For example, a CEO will rarely say an area is to get a lower priority in the coming period, even if it will. But this fact can be deduced from clues such as, the area is absent from key investment areas listed by the CEO. They casually mention that colleagues in an area should prepare to do more with less. They mention a cost-saving initiative, adding something like, this is just the first and I hope more follow. After big announcements, talk with product managers and engineering managers to confirm you understood the real message. As a Staff Plus engineer, it's necessary to translate corporate language used by leadership, which is a skill that comes with practice. Talk and listen to customers. If your customers are consumers or external businesses, find ways to hear from these people. Here are a few methods. In B2C companies, get access to customer feedback. This could be on social media, app store reviews for consumer mobile apps, and customer feedback channels. In B2B companies, ask to sit in on sales calls. Volunteer to do customer support, helping triage incoming issues and to fix some of them. This is an underrated way to understand what is frustrating customers. Also, your offer will most likely be welcomed because few engineers are enthusiastic about support in general. Get involved in strategy discussions. As a Staff Plus engineer, there should already be a seat at the table for you in engineering strategy and planning discussions. However, you probably won't be invited to product strategy and business strategy discussions. But attending these meetings is an excellent way to broaden your understanding of the business. So make this happen and shadow some meetings. Talk to your manager or product manager and ask to attend a session where you can listen and learn. They're unlikely to reject such a request. Work on cross-functional projects. The easiest way to get a broader appreciation for the business is to work on projects involving collaboration with a variety of engineering and business teams. As a Staff Plus engineer, you are more likely to be assigned to work on these kinds of projects. However, if you're not working on such initiatives at Staff Plus level, it's helpful to seek them out. Here's how. Talk with your manager. Tell them your goal is to help the company and your team to execute better, meaning you put team projects first, and that if there are cross-team initiatives your team can help with, you'd be thrilled to. Depending on how much trust you've built up with your manager, you could share that working on cross-team projects could help you grow professionally, increase your understanding of the business, expand your network, and ultimately help your team execute better. Talk with people on other teams. Talk with fellow engineers, product managers, and engineering managers on other teams to broaden your understanding and network. There might be opportunities to get involved in their projects. Look out for projects you can help with. If your company has a culture of RFCs or design docs, monitor them and offer to help out in areas you have expertise in. Talk with other managers and engineers and offer to help part-time when there's a project for which your expertise is useful. Mentor others. If you mentor engineers on different teams, you will get insights into challenges they face. Mentees working on cross-functional projects will likely face challenges, and you'll have insight into problems from their perspective. Of course, you're not guaranteed to be paired with such people, but mentoring is such a large growth area that as a staff plus engineer, it's sensible to take this activity on anyway. Have one-on-ones with your manager and leadership chain. During one-on-ones with your manager, ask questions about parts of the business you don't fully understand. Your manager will be able to clarify things, or they can give you guidance on where to look. It's in their interest and your own to get a clearer understanding of the business, even if some less experienced engineering managers don't yet know it. Have one-on-ones with your skip level and other engineering leaders. When I worked at Uber, a VP of engineering who headed the developer platform, an organization I worked with but was not part of, visited our office, and I had a one-on-one with them to understand more about what their team was working on. It turned out this VP wanted to hear more about developer tooling pain points on my team. I learned a lot about how developer tools work and ways to help each other. As a follow-up, I asked the VP to do a one-on-one with a staff engineer on my team, and they happily agreed. The staff engineer on my team got a lot of value from that one conversation. Later, when an experienced staff engineer joined our organization, they set up such conversations proactively, without waiting for their manager to do it. They had one-on-ones with pretty much their whole management chain and the peers of their skip-level managers in an effort to understand the business and what mattered to engineering's leadership. Unsurprisingly, this staff engineer identified low-hanging fruit projects to get involved in and figured out which projects to prioritize. Carve out dedicated time to read PRDs. Within big tech and in many scale-ups and tech companies, product managers write product requirements documents, PRDs, as a way to capture business ideas to turn into features or products. These documents usually capture the business goals and the proposed functionality of the product. Spend time reading PRDs relevant for your business area, and ask questions when you find something unclear. Doing this regularly will help you stay connected with what the business direction is. Knowing about this direction will help with making architecture decisions. For example, on how to evolve the infrastructure to support a couple of related product initiatives that are already captured in various PRDs. If your company does not have a culture of PRDs or of product managers capturing specifications in writing, you'll have to find alternative ways to keep a sense of product direction. For example, by talking with product people. Create conditions for serendipitous meetings. It can pay off to meet and talk with colleagues whom you don't know, especially if it doesn't consume much time. Here are a couple of ideas. If working in an office, sit next to someone at lunch whom you don't know and strike up a conversation about your jobs. You can also do this when grabbing a coffee. When attending training sessions, make the effort to get to know other attendees. In these situations, I found it interesting to get to know which areas people work in, what makes that area special, and what their challenges are. Plus, I was always interested to hear how they worked with tech and engineering, and if there was anything I could help with. I found meeting people from different parts of the business is an eye-opening experience, especially in how differently they work from software engineering, and how a major challenge means something completely different. Serendipitous meetings will often not result in much that's immediately actionable, but as long as they don't take up too much time, they should be interesting. A meeting like this could sow the seed of a future collaboration or form a connection with a different part of the business. Why do few engineers meet business stakeholders? My experience of working at larger tech companies and talking with peers elsewhere is that it's pretty rare for engineers to take the initiative and reach out to business stakeholders. Why is this? Common reasons I've observed include, my manager doesn't, so why should I? In many cases, engineering managers don't talk directly with business stakeholders and assume this is product folks' job. Therefore, there's little incentive. At more political companies, where there's not much trust between managers and engineers, it could even be seen as rocking the boat to reach out to the business stakeholders if your manager does not. They've never seen a fellow engineer do it. For engineers who haven't worked with peers who proactively talked with business stakeholders, there's no role model for doing so, even as these engineers become more senior. Product leadership doesn't encourage it. When engineering managers, product management, or the company's leadership doesn't encourage engineers to work directly with the business or fails to highlight cases of such collaboration, it's little wonder engineers don't think of doing so. Engineering doesn't work closely with the business. Some companies claim engineers are product-focused or customer-focused, but a divide exists which means the business has no real way to interact with engineering, and vice versa. The company culture encourages silos. Plenty of companies run a more traditional management style, which favors information being collected and distributed by key people, usually managers. There may be informal and formal structures, which mean individual contributors have less access to information and fewer opportunities to distribute it. Most big tech companies don't work like this, but I've observed a surprising number of startups do so as they grow, due to leadership not being deliberate about building a culture of transparency and empowering engineers to make decisions. Engineers don't have autonomy. In companies where engineering is treated as a feature factory and engineers are expected to do as they're told, there is little to no autonomy. Within these companies, engineers are discouraged from talking with business stakeholders because it's seen as a waste of time. After all, product managers and project managers already do this. 4. Public companies. If you work at a publicly traded company, there is an opportunity every 3 months to find out how the business is doing. This is the quarterly reporting cycle, which includes an earnings call with interested parties after the publication of the latest financial results. Publicly traded companies must disclose key information in quarterly reports, as part of which the leadership answers questions by analysts and journalists. These calls are usually for investors, stakeholders, and the media. But as an employee, you can often find information which isn't communicated internally. Useful information in quarterly reports and investor calls. Numbers. How is revenue trending? And what about profitability or lack thereof? Investment areas. Which products, teams, and areas does leadership choose to highlight? Questions from analysts. Expect these to probe the leadership on sensitive areas. What are these areas, and does the leadership have good responses? Forward-looking commitments. What could be the impact on your product or area of forecasts for targets like revenue generation and spending reduction? Understanding the meanings of terms like debits and credits, net revenue, cash flow, and EBITDA provides a strong sense of a company's financial situation. This is universal knowledge that might help you in the future if you start your own business or get the chance to take an executive position. A good resource for getting started is Accounting for Developers by Modern Treasury. A book that's helpful for understanding how to think about the business is The Personal MBA by Josh Kaufman. 5. Startups. Unlike publicly traded companies, startups do not report quarterly on their financial situation, nor face awkward questions from analysts. However, startups often have far greater internal transparency, so use it. If your startup is transparent by default, you should have access to business metrics and a sense of how things are going, growth areas, and challenges. If not, ask about them. There should be little reason to not share such details with a highly experienced engineer. After all, this information helps improve decision-making about what to work on. Take advantage if your startup is small enough that you have access to the founders. Hold catch-ups with the founders every now and then and get a sense of how they think about the business and what their priorities and business goals are. Ask about relations with investors and what the priorities of investors and the board are for a picture of how things are going. If your startup is raising a new round of funding, ask if you can see the pitch deck. It will describe where your startup is at and where it hopes to get to. Knowing those goals will make it easier to decide which work to say yes to and what to deprioritize. 6. your industry. As a Staff Plus engineer, it is invaluable to understand the industry or sector in which your product or company exists. Understanding an industry is a huge undertaking, which is effectively never-ending, because industries are enormous, complex, and always changing. But here are some approaches that can help. Map out key players and key products. Which companies and products are the market leaders, and which are up and coming? Data from industry reports, such as from Gartner or similar sources, can help with this. Find and read trade publications. For each industry, there are dedicated publications like websites and magazines. For example, in the travel industry, Skift is an in-depth online magazine many insiders read. For the creator economy, The Information's Creator Economy is a popular source. Find relevant publications and decide which to follow. Many quality publications are paid for, so consider making a business case to your manager for buying a subscription to keep up with developments in your industry, which could pay dividends for the team and company. Follow industry news. Is a competitor releasing a new feature that customers are excited about? Or is another competitor retiring a product, which could be a chance to onboard their frustrated users? Keep on top of industry news, especially that which relates to your product area. After all, products aren't built in a vacuum, and your product and team must adapt to changes as they happen. By keeping up with industry news, you might be able to react faster and to capitalize.